the entire point of the hedge fund industry is to create, is basically to have returns that aren't correlated with basically buying the stock market at large. It's a lot less about like having, you know, trying to make five times your money or something like that. But it's really about coming up with unique investment strategies that can create, you know, what's known as alpha, which is kind of uncorrelated return.
Welcome to the ATX DAO podcast, the hub for exploring the forefront of blockchain technology and Austin's Web3 community. Your hosts, Nick, Mason, Luke, and Ash, connect you with innovators within ATX DAO and beyond as we venture into the world of decentralized technology. So crack open a beer and join us for a front row seat to learn about the innovations and trends shaping our digital future. This is the ATX DAO podcast. Welcome, everyone, to the ATX DAO podcast. We are very excited to have a guest with us today. So Clifton King, welcome to the podcast, man. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
Awesome. And so with me today, we also have
Ash. Hey, what's up, bro? ATX DAO member here, too.
Absolutely. So really excited to have one of our founding DAO members with us today. And Clifton, wanted to start off just kind of getting a little to know you a little bit better. How did you get into the space? And, you know, just tell us a little about yourself.
Yeah, sure. From Austin, at least like in college, and I have a lot of family here, et cetera. Grew up in South Texas, came to Austin for college. And then, I've been attached to Austin for a long time. Started a company here out of college, and moved it to Dallas for adult supervision. And nice. Then we grew the company a lot. And so that was an interesting leadership experience. And then, We sold the company to a private equity company, and this was like 2015. And in around 2014, when we started getting offers, I was like, well, why is our company worth, et cetera? And I got pretty interested in finance just in general, like almost every aspect of it. And so when we sold our company, I had some like recruiter from Bridgewater reach out to me, which is kind of like the, you know, like the one place where I'd, you know, really love to go. And then ended up in research there, which is like, you know, subjectively, I think a much more interesting place than other functions in that company, which are a little more scripted. That was like really interesting experience. So yeah, that started my hedge fund journey, then did market neutral equities. And it was kind of like, you know, I would say it was probably like before Bridgewater. It was probably 2013, 2014 when I started like buying, you know, Bitcoin on Coinbase or whatever. I was, nice. You know, it was, you know, back then just kind of nonchalantly just trading like hundreds of Bitcoin, you know, and making, you know, 20% or something like that, and thinking you're a genius because you sold it at like $250.
Wow.
And then looking back on that and just realizing how poor you are.
You traded like 10 pizzas for like 20 pizzas.
That's right.
Exactly.
Okay, so a quick question.
Yeah,
I'm gonna ask you to dog feed some information for me.
Yeah,
being a dummy in the room, but let's circle back to going to school in UT. So like, what'd you study at UT that like originally, and what was your first startup?
So computer science. So I studied computer science. I didn't even know what a hedge fund was until I was probably like 25 or 26. Studied computer science. I actually dropped out of the UT to join the Army, and then I got as a special forces candidate, and I got hurt in airborne school.
Oh, wow.
And so came back with my tail between my legs and went back to school. And then my startup started, and then I joined a startup. Startup started taking off. It was an ed tech startup serving higher ed. Wow. We actually never had UT as a client, but we had 600 other colleges and universities.
Wow. That's amazing.
So, yeah.
So first, two kudos are there. Few men can decide, few people in general can decide to serve. Right.
Yeah.
You took special initiative.
To do that.
And then to do something to go really downrange, which is amazing. And also like, wow, ed tech, you're like way ahead of the curve there, right? Like that's a huge thing now.
Yeah.
Like,
you caught it for sure. Like, yeah.
2015,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. So we captured a lot of the market very quickly. We were in student affairs rather than academic affairs. And so budgets were pretty small. You know, it was like, we were just like a bunch of, you know, I mean, we were just like a young group of people, trying to sort out like, oh, it'd be cool if this product existed, so let's go make it.
Yeah.
Not really knowing, I think, that much about the markets and what the caps are there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so I think like terminally we had like $6 million a year in bookings, which is pretty good.
Fucking awesome.
For someone selling into student affairs. Yeah. You know, because, you know, it's like student life, student organizations, all that sort of stuff, paperless office, kind of dynamic, like request systems, like for different offices, administrators could approve certain things.
Are you sure you needed the grownups in Dallas? Because it seems like you ran like a SaaS business in EdTech well before Zuckerberg's like, let's just try and figure out who's the hottest girl on campus.
It's funny. I was just watching that last night. I was watching the social network last night.
So like, so it was like, you know, 2008, we had, you know, by mid 2008, we had everything. We had like, we were on GitHub. Yeah. The company was on GitHub and we were using AWS. And okay, so that was, you know, that was kind of early days. All of those is, you know, I think within the first few months of GitHub launching.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so we were pretty early on a lot of that. You know, it was Ruby on Rails, which is pretty progressive technology stack for the time. And, you know, there's a whole lot of depth you can kind of get in there. And so, no, the adult supervision was actually super helpful. It was mostly like we had a CFO who was just like, you know, he had been like a public company CFO and taken companies public. And he was just like, you know, he basically said, don't spend any of that money. I once saw him like had an account executive in his office and then like kind of like flipped out at her for getting like $20 a day car insurance for like a rental car when because the credit card covered that.
Yeah.
And so anyway. So
is post GFC, right?
Yeah. We bootstrapped. We had a $40,000 revolving line of credit. We raised $200K, and then like when we moved to Dallas, we raised another $500K, but we never even used
it.
Tapped into it. Yeah. And we sold the company. I think we had like $900K. So So basically, we raised no money and then built like a decent sized company, at least I don't. Yeah, and then as far as you know, crypto, I'd always kind of like you know kind of been into it, and then you know, like one toe in, not paying that much attention to it, and you know, it was really you know, it was a combination of things. It's like toward the end of my market equity hedge fund days, like one of the guys that I worked with was a guy you know, was previously at Bridgewater, and it was between him, it was being a third co-founder at DYDX.
Oh wow!
With his buddies at Princeton, or working with us, and then I like unfortunately, and I still feel like terrible to this day. Got him to work for us, but he's like the head of research at DYDX now. Super smart guy. Awesome. And so like you know, he was doing some market making stuff toward the end of the days. 60 Capital, which is my marketing hedge fund. So he was doing market making at DYDX, then building some of these systems. And so, like you know, I was watching some of these more centralized exchanges, kind of like working. And there are these things that were just merely ideas before. And it was, I think, like it was after DeFi summer. Unfortunately, I didn't get involved with that. But it was the fall of 2020 was when I kind of just started using all the Ethereum stuff again. And I still had some Ethereum from before. Really just started using it, and I was just like, holy shit, all of this stuff works. This is incredible. And so that's kind of like what really kind of I think kicked it off for me.
So like, I mean, it seems like really funny how like most people just discovered it through like an investment opportunity in a way. Some people discovered it through the new kind of like class of the compute like discovery, right? The distributed compute discovery. Some people discovered it through the degen discovery, which I think both you and I definitely qualify, right? Where it's like you came at it through more of an analytical kind of perspective of like, holy fucking shit, distributed compute primitives, which is like super fucking crazy, right?
Yeah.
How much of those things did you find like nascently like, well, like compared to like a traditional finance like kind of environment to this, it's like, well, I can do like quantum leaps. Like, I'm just curious to see, like, were you wanting to scale the build and scale in this?
I mean, well, you know, at least, you know, until more recently, it hasn't been like super scalable. But it works, you know, like it's highly secure, it's trustless, and, you know, and it works. I thought it was incredible. So, like, you know, I almost immediately, after I used these things and I was, kind of blown away. I taught myself Solidity. So like in hedge funds, there's this thing called like separately managed accounts, where basically like you can trade an account, but you can't withdraw from it. And so you kind of have like restricted access. And so I was like, oh, well, I'll build one of these in crypto. So I actually, I taught myself Solidity, kind of like building one of these kind of things is like, you know, is mostly a toy, but, you know, but like, you know, the Solidity tests and whatever, like pass. Yeah. Anyway, it was cool. And so, yeah, and at that point, I was like, no, this stuff's great. I'm gonna, you know, I at least need to, instead of having just like a toe in, I should put my whole, at least one whole leg in.
Yeah.
At this point,
water's warm,
right?
Just for degenerates, come on
in. yeah. And then, I guess I'll fast forward to probably, I think 2021 when we founded ETXDAO.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so basically it was, I think, July 2021, and it was me, Roberto Tolomas, that was formerly at Vasari, now he works at a hedge fund, Malcolm Capuza, who started his own hedge fund, still has that, he moved to LA, he's like not really active with the DAO anymore, Dan Kim, who is not really active with the DAO anymore, I think he might have moved away, but I'm not sure. John, Chainlink John, who everyone's familiar with, and Malcolm Navarro.
Oh wow!
And so we were like the OGs, and so like we were just basically we were at a bar, sitting outside,
yeah,
you know, in East Austin, having some beers, and we were like, "Yo, we should just start a DAO."
Yeah.
And I was like, all right. And yeah. So I just like, you know, made a GitHub, made a web page.
Yeah.
And we so we basically kicked it off, and then we had a Genesis round in I think August or September.
Yeah.
So basically just like almost just like a month after that, we did our Genesis round. And then we brought on I think a lot of the early people, like, you know, Mason and Jesse and some of these other Genesis people. Yeah. And so, you know, we were like, okay, so that pulled some capital together, and you know, it's and I think like the DAO's like extremely successful trajectory has a whole lot to do with having, you know, someone like Mason who's like just incredible marketer, great at growth,
yeah,
kind of running that sort of thing, and I think that's been most of it. On the technical side, like John did, I think our V1. ATXL NFTs that we just used for Genesis, and then I've done the contracts since then, and then I did the minting website, I think in both instances I basically had somewhat of a clear schedule through the last minting rounds. I had a clear schedule for something like 10 days before the mint, and I just cranked it all out.
Nice.
You know, I think with doing the smart contract engineering stuff, like you have to be like reasonably paranoid, and you have to just write like just an absolute ton of unit tests of every kind of thing you can think of,
all kinds of vectors,
so did that, and because they're on GitHub, ATXDAO/NFT, I think, it was I'm glad I was able to help, you know.
That's very cool. So just thinking back from like, I mean, starting off at a bar, like with an idea to like where ATXDAO is now, like how close is like what it's become to like what y'all thought it was going to be at the time that y'all.
I mean, you know, I think this was kind of the dream for it. You know, I think we didn't, you know, we've had some ideas. Oh, you know, can you kind of turn some of the things, some of the components into a business or whatever? But I think like ultimately, I think just having like building a very strong community and then letting like, you know, if there's any kind of commercial opportunities, they can kind of shoot out and then, you know, members from ATXDAO can go found those. And so I think like a lot of it's just kind of building the network and the community. And that's really what we put the effort into, you know, all of the kind of the funds that we've raised from membership rounds has all gone directly back into that. And so, you know, I think it's gone about as good as anything could go. And, you know, I wasn't involved in creating the DTXDAO for Dallas. But like, you know, the fact that recently sprung up and that's kind of an offshoot of ATXDAO and reflects some of our efforts, it's a great feeling to see like some of these things pop up and more communities kind of coalesce.
Yeah, I mean, I know personally, like, Yeah, I mean, like, so going back, like, this community that you've created, like, which this started off like this sprightly thing, which mean like a bunch of people, they're like, dude, we should just create something like BIOS for us. Just like super fucking crazy. It seems very simple. It's hard to execute, right? And then it's hard to curate this vibe. So it seems like every single person along that way, from founding member like you and Roberto and John and the rest of the crew, right? Whether they're involved or not involved anymore, is like still responsible to like set that initiative. That
yeah,
initiative, right?
I mean, you know, like for instance, like John's been less involved recently, but when we had the big party for consensus, like yeah. or maybe the one before that, whatever.
Permissionless.
I think South by Southwest.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But with the big party that we had for there, like he brought Chainlink in as a big sponsor, and we had like a big banger, and it was awesome. And
yeah,
so like you know, I think everyone, you know, every like people, you know, there's a couple people that are like not active at all anymore in the from the founding team, but I think by and large, the rest of us still kind of like come in and contribute where we think it's valuable.
Yeah.
And you know, and then we're always you know here to like step in if we need to.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, I'm not a member of, like, the original round or the Genesis crew, right? I'm part of the Bluebonnet group, right? Which is, I guess, the most recent class,
yeah,
right?
Same here, yeah.
Yeah, Bluebonnet love, bro.
Yeah, Bluebonnet.
Hell yeah. I'll give you a pound, too, bro. I mean, OG and all that. But, like, that being said, like, yeah, I mean, it seems like my take is that there's, like, a stickiness to the people in the community, right? Because it's, like, you can clearly see there's people who are building interesting things or working on interesting things or clearly switched on to the idea of like what something on crypto rails can offer, right? And you can like vibe off each other, and like that's very rare to find, right? You know what I mean? Like you go to some of these conferences and you like meet some people that are interested in the space or like working in the space, but they're not switched on. You know, you can't find the sparkle. Talk to you again about like what are you working on, and like maybe there's like some area to like work on something together. And like, you know, all these kinds of opportunities and ideas have been a result of like me coming in here and like fucking cool ass people over here is like, dude, we should work on this thing to fucking together, you know? Like,
yeah, no, dope, and that's I think that was the whole idea of creating it in the first place.
Yeah,
it's to kind of create a place to do that. And you know, and then you know, I think like Austin as a city, like you know, on like a per capita basis is like pretty amazing for crypto activity, you know. Austin's always been known as like this tech hub.
Yeah.
But like, I think the, you know, and then there's a lot of old money from like semiconductors that's existed here for a long time. But like, by and large, I think it was like kind of like a myth more than it was in reality. Like, it was essentially large tech companies had support and sales staff here, and all the engineering talent was, you know, basically in San Francisco or New York City.
Yeah.
And then watching, I think the last, you know, I think, less than 10 years, really, you really saw like this a large influx of like good engineering talent and a lot of these types of people that you really need to, I think, build some of these highly scalable startups. And so it's been really interesting watching that kind of transformation. And, you know, I mean, Austin's a great city. I love it and whatever. But like, you know, I didn't expect for that to happen. Like that, there was no expectation for that to happen. I was in, you know, until 2020 I was in New York and that's kind of like where everything was happening, and there's just like nothing going on but in Austin until, you know, like not long before I moved. And so like the city's really transformed over the last 10 and especially the last 5 years.
Yeah, and it's weird, right? Like, because you like live in these like huge capital cities where like money flows there, like having like, New York, like you mentioned, London or SF in a different kind of way where it's like, you know, more tech-centered, you get these weird echo chambers. And, like, you get these echo chambers of, like, that are not necessarily productive, in my opinion, right? Where you need, like, a certain level of eclecticism, I guess, if I can coin that word, is that you need, like, people from other walks of field to, like, come in and then expand your domain knowledge to be like, oh, you know, there's clearly an opportunity here to get feedback and then build something new. But, like, yeah, you get these weird kinds of things where it's, like, you silo yourself into a culture and a community, and as a result, like, you always just get feedback that's just like feeding back into the community, and you don't know if it's good or not, right? But it seems like Austin has like kind of like a good set of vibes across everyone, and you get like there's a good mix of people here that you can just mix with different things, and like, you know, and from all different walks of life. And I think it's a the DAO seems to be an extension of like Austin culture,
right? Yeah. Yeah, no, the DAO, yeah, no, it, absolutely. It's been, yeah, it's been cool. Like, you know, I think there's a lot of people have like kind of self-selected coming here to go start something new.
Yeah.
And I think kind of having that, you know, kind of creates a pool of people that I think, you know, lend themselves well to, you know, starting the businesses. And, you know, especially a lot of crypto people relative to other places. And so, yeah, no, it's been great.
Yeah, a bunch of outliers shifting the standard distribution.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah. I mean, the, you know, I think you need the kind of people on the right end of the curve if you really want to do great things.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then, you know, like I was, the point I made earlier is, you know, you didn't really see a whole lot of that in Austin until like the last 5 years. Yeah. And then, and now you've seen like a lot of it. So yeah, I mean, I think the future here is really bright.
Yes, you heard it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Clifton for City Council 2028.
That's right. I think I'm too autistic. So I'm
sorry. I think you're the right amount.
So you mentioned a little bit about some of the stuff that you do in terms of like hedge funds and things like that with investing. How would you, like for somebody that maybe isn't as knowledgeable about that kind of thing, or especially from like the blockchain side of it, how would you kind of explain what that is to somebody that may not be as familiar in that space?
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, it's just coming up with different investment strategies and then having strategies that like the entire point of the hedge fund industry is basically to have returns that aren't correlated with basically buying the stock market at large. It's a lot less about like having, you know, trying to make 5 times your money or something like that. You know, where I think like generally speaking, most people have better access to that by just like being long equities and crypto and some of these other things. And so it's really about coming up with unique investment strategies that can create, you know, what's known as alpha, which is kind of uncorrelated returns. And so, you know, so at, you know, 60, we traded some of these, you know, ransom strategies. It was basically global equities. We had one strategy where we traded like similar companies across geographic domains and would adjust for things like flows. So like Komatsu and Caterpillar are both like capital goods companies. They make like trackers and that sort of stuff.
Heavy machinery.
And Komatsu is based in like Japan. And so, you know, if a hedge fund, say, wants to bet on Japanese growth, they'll buy a bunch of Nikkei 225. The Nikkei 225 is like a price-weighted index, which is similar to the Dow Jones Industrial Average in the U.S., which is also price-weighted. And so there'll be like, you know, undue influence on particular stocks in that index, like Komatsu. And so basically, like, that stock will go up, and Caterpillar may not go up, even though, you know, or Caterpillar will go down or whatever, or vice versa. And then you're kind of betting that the real economic exposure for Caterpillar and Komatsu are both just basically like global fixed investment or something like that. And so really, you should be long one and short the other whenever they diverge by too much on like currency deficits. So that's like an example of like a trade. And then I also traded like global mining, another company. I think for people that really want to get like, you know, crazy investment returns or whatever, you just kind of have it, you know, for that. I mean, obviously, I think a lot of it relies on luck if you're really trying to market on returns. But, you know, a lot of it is also you can just take a lot more risk. You can just buy a riskier thing or a basket of riskier things and, you know, and then kind of hope it plays out, you know, positively for you. I think that's like a better way to do returns than to have like a, you know, one of these investment strategies. These investment strategies are really for trying to like raise money, raise a large pool of capital. And kind of get fees on it and then use that as a part of your own portfolio, but not really the primary part of your portfolio, generally speaking, for like marketing and stuff. And so I think it's a lot less interesting for most individual investors. And most individual investors just kind of focus on, you know, picking things they like, you know.
Pick their blue chips, pick the crypto.
Yeah.
And then be on a time weighted average.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think that's what most people should do. But like that's just kind of like a peek into like the kind of thing, like why hedge funds exist and what they do.
No, that's super fascinating.
They run strategies. So
have you watched Billions?
I think I watched like the first season.
Dude, I watched Billions recently. That made me, hedge funds are crazy.
Yeah. it was funny because they, in Bridgewater Research, there was like a sports psychology person that worked in like a management role in that, research.
That happens in Billions.
That's a example. And then also it's in Westport. And so, and then the buildings kind of look similar. And really the design of them. And so they obviously model a lot of stuff there, but I think like with the actual things that happened there, it was really kind of trying to copy the like Stephen A. Cohen thing, because that's all like discretionary equities and insider trading, you know, like concentrated equity bets.
Dude, yeah, and that, like
just insider trading.
Yeah, and Paul Giamatti is based on like pre-para, right?
Yeah. Dude, awesome show.
Yes.
Yeah, I got to watch Billions.
Billions as well. Yeah. And Showtime, sponsors of our podcast as well, I guess, you know?
Yeah, hopefully of course. Soon.
I'm looking to have Bobby Axelrod on the pod.
But this is a fascinating insight into this world. I'm just curious to see, like, are we parlaying this and now in crypto?
Yeah, what are you trading these days?
this summer I got my first crypto punk.
That's amazing.
I almost bottom dick that. So that was cool. It was obviously, you know, luck. I thought that one was good. I've been very ETH centric for a very long time. And so, you know, like I have like some solo staking stuff. I've been in the ETH ecosystem a long time. I'm like a strong believer in that ecosystem. But I think things can always change. I think, I've had like some Solana for a while, but like it's just turned into a de minimis amount. I'm pretty sure like I was in one of these DeFi protocols, like a Borrow Lend protocol, where I was like yield farming.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure like the system kind of broke in some kind of way. And I'm pretty sure I just got like liquidated by some kind of Solana MEV bot like a long time ago. And so most of that's been wiped away. But yeah, I think some of that stuff's kind of interesting. I think the Solana. So the recent Solana run, I think, is a really good case study, I think, in kind of crypto investing.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of things to talk about there.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like a separate L1. It's very much like non-portable to any other ecosystem. And it makes a completely different set of trade-offs. When I've seen Anatoly like arguing with like Polonia or whatever, like on principle, I think that Polonia is like, you know, I think with regards to how Polonia thinks about optimizing the modular roll-up system, mm-hmm. I think he's like spot on. But with regards to like the base layer and what you should optimize for, I actually have always thought Anatoly makes a way better fucking point.
Yeah,
which is that, you know, like have, you know, spending $2,000 or $3,000 on a machine is not the end of the world. Like if you're staking, you know, if you're staking ETH, you know, you have like, it's like 64K.
That's what I said when Roberto was on the podcast.
Yep.
It's 64K.
It's expensive as shit.
Yeah. I've had ones, like I was like one of the very first like five-digit validator ID. And like, so like, you know, ETH was a lot less expensive then. So I think the trade-offs are just wrong. In the Anatoly versus, Vitalik, I actually think, you know, Anatoly's right, you know, and especially like these hardware costs are coming down rapidly over time. And so on that philosophical level, I agree with it. The economics of the token are pretty bad. The distribution is really bad, like super bad. The distribution is super bad. Everyone's just being dumped on right now. But you know, obviously Galaxy Digital played this, just Galaxy brained it. funny, turn of phrase there. Galaxy Digital, Galaxy brained it. But I think watching some of these things happen with Solana has been interesting. There's been a strong they've had a strong community for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of technical reasons why I think like it's a dangerous thing to program on. At least it has been. historically until like especially like Anchorling and some of these other things that come out.
Yes.
And that so like if you're writing a Solidity smart contract, like you know you have a notion of self and things that you own. And you don't have to like worry about those things ever. They don't even have to enter your mind. And so with the Solana programming model, everything has to be like basically the programs are deployed separately from like the addresses that they own, and so you have to have pointers to all the addresses that you own, and you have to be very careful about the construction of all these things. And so these things can actually all be solved by a compiler, and then over time I think they've been really pretty good at doing that, and then eventually it'll be just as easy as Solidity or whatever, or like, you know, approximately the same way. But it, you know, it's still not, and it was, you know, it was in pretty bad shape before. I mean, like you had like, you know, Jump, with the wormhole hack was like, I think like, and some of the other hacks in Solana was just kind of like, it was like exactly this issue that was very hard to, you know, like, to kind of cover all your bases everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically like an attacker just, you know, gave this program a pointer to that like wasn't validated somewhere, and they stole like $350 million.
Yeah.
And so so obviously that some of that stuff is going to set it back. The other things that have set it back obviously have been like the various downtimes that it's had, but you know the thing is like it is such an incredibly optimized system. Mm-hmm. And the reason that the programming model is the way it is because it allows for maximum parallelizability. Because all of the addresses that are going to be interacted with in the program are known at the time that your program is being called, and so you can kind of it's much easier to parallelize all that stuff, and so you get a lot of performance out of it. The thing that's kind of been interesting there's tons of stuff here, especially like I think some of the price run up. This is a very very clear example of reflexivity at work. In crypto, reflexivity is kind of like this George Soros kind of concept, where essentially kind of like the price will lead the fundamental outcome.
Yeah.
And so
that's season 2 episode 75 and millions.
Yeah.
So like, you know, there's lots of examples of this. Like if home prices go up, you know, banks are more likely, you know, will lend at, you know, lower rates. And the collateral looks better, and then that'll make home prices go up more, because you know a lot of the fundamentals for like, you know, financing improve there.
Economic
and
feedback
with companies, if your stock price goes up rapidly, you can sell stock into it and just raise tons of money at very low cost of capital, and you know, and then and you know, use that for whatever purpose you need. And so and then essentially like, you know, so. In a macro way, like across the whole economy, when the stock prices go up rapidly and the cost of capital goes way down, the companies will, you know, start to invest more as long as they can get the right return on that. Yeah. And what they'll and that will, so when a company does any kind of like capital investment, it'll it just basically adds to the revenue of all the other companies, and so like, you know, so everything just kind of grows. And so that's like an example of like, oh, the price goes up and then the fundamentals get better. It's not that the fundamentals get better and then the price goes up.
It's kind
and
of
so
a
like,
lag.
Like, yeah. Like, and so like, if you look at this, like Solana, you know, not too long ago, like the DEX volume, like if you just go to like DEX screener or whatever, and you just look at DEX volume, this is like whenever I'm looking at different chains, this is like one of the number one things I just look at for activity is DEX volume. Because DEX volume, you know, like anyway, I think it's a very good indicator. And so so DEX volume on Solana was like completely fucking dead.
Yeah.
You know, it was like worse than dead. You know, I was taking calls with like some random, you know, kind of very large Solana projects where like they were just offering these huge incentives to like LP on their platform because they're, you know, there's like zero PBL. And there's actually still kind of zero PBL. But essentially when the price started rocketing up, when it started pumping, you know, like then people got interested in it, and then the DEX volumes went up, and then now it looks more reasonable. And then that's just like this example of investment reflexivity that, you know, that's happened in front of everybody that I think is worth like noting. So I think that's kind of a pretty interesting investment game. And you know, and there's zero reason why it might not continue up.
Yeah. So Solana seems to be the idea of building the bear market, right? Yeah. Like, of all these economics things that they've done, they're just choosing to actually be like, hey, all this froth has been cut out. That has been cut out.
Yeah.
Now the people that are there are actually like, okay, how can I build a real signal outside of this? Right? From a build perspective, from an investment perspective, like, people are putting it in. And like you said, there's these lead lag, right? Typically how traditional any company, whether it's in Web 2 or whether you're like building it, it's like you have this huge amount of like lead amount of capital. And now you're going to invest this capital and then start building things. And then later on, when the so-called bear market comes in, the bull market comes in, that is, like, it's a result of like, no, we've been doing this for the last like 6 months. We've been doing this like the last year. You just haven't been paying attention for it because you've been listening to all the noise, not the signal.
Yeah. And so, I think that's, you know, like with regards to like, oh, well, you know, like what's like, how do you invest in crypto? I think this kind of recent run in Solana is like, is just an excellent case for, you can't just look at the fundamentals, you know, like a lot of it is literally just like thing goes up and so you buy it or whatever. but it's just like the thing goes up, then you buy it, then make sure the fundamentals start to track it.
Yeah.
Or else, you know, obviously it's just like a pump.
Because right, if the thing goes up, theoretically, it's not interest for more builders. So it's like, oh, it's more valuable. We'll see.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then it's more value accrued to the ecosystem.
Self-fulfilling. Yeah, I mean, you know, I still think it's like things aren't probably that positive for Solana DeFi. I mean, maybe they are, but
Solana NFTs are cool.
I think like the positive stuff there, a lot of it's going to be like consumer stuff and like payments and some of these other
gaming
things.
Like that.
It's on Shopify already, right?
The micropayments thesis is like very, 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 very aligned with Solana's tech stack, I feel.
Yeah. So I think that stuff's pretty positive. And then with regards to like DeFi investing and some of my experiences there, you know, it's like one thing I kind of learned, you know, at a Swiss-based crypto fund, kind of worked on liquid markets and did some venture stuff too. And one of the things I think, you know, I learned from some of the early people, and it also had some MEV stuff, which is interesting as well. But the thing that I thought was most interesting about kind of like DeFi projects that have succeeded, and then what are the patterns that you look for, is that essentially like you need to get like old money Ethereum OGs in it, because that's who has all the funds in DeFi, and everyone else is just super poor and doesn't matter. And so, you know,
what you're saying is like, let them eat cake, basically.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying like, with regards to like, I wouldn't go out buying like Solana DeFi projects.
Yeah.
Like, I just wouldn't do it. I mean, I think Solana itself, you know, as long as the momentum keeps up, I think it seems like there's like a decent case for that to maybe outrun it. But yeah, I wouldn't touch most of the DeFi projects.
It's just Solana. Liquidity is not going to.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're just not going to get, you kind of have a big ball of money in crypto that are the OGs, and the OGs aren't going to, you know, like, as far as I can see, they have no plans to move any kind of money, like any kind of real capital. And so it's just basically going to be on mainnet. Some of it's going to like arbitrage metal. But that's it, really.
Also, shout out to the shadowy cabal that are the OGs in crypto. Thank you for sponsoring our podcast. Yeah, we gotta drop them in the shadow.
Yeah.
No, but this is really interesting. So, like, what exactly are you working on right now? And like, how? I mean, you're clearly evaluating other systems in the space. Like, what are you personally doing? What are you championing?
I'm not championing anything. I'm still very biased toward Ethereum ecosystem. You know, just been in it for a long time. Everything works, and things are improving. And so I think that stuff's been good. You know, there's like random tokens where the fundamentals look good. Like, I think like Silo is a funny one because it has like, you know, it's like super low market cap, but it has like 180 million TVL, which is, I think, something like half of the TVL of Solana.
Or something. Oh, wow. Wait, Silo's founder is local, right? He's awesome based, isn't he?
Who?
Silo.
Maybe, yeah.
I think he's a member of the DAO, actually.
Oh, shit.
I forget all his right. name.
Well, see, that's another reason why ETX DAO is awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I think it's local. I forgot his name. Super fascinating guy. But yeah, okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Anyway, it kind of seems like it's like another take on the old Rari Capital lending pools or whatever, which, you know, I think under some conditions is like a really good idea, and other conditions it's not much good idea. I think it's a cool project. I have another buddy from Bridgewater started like a permissioned L2. He was working on OP Stack, but recently switched to Arbitrum. And so, like, I think their thing is basically, like, you KYC to do anything on their L2, and then you can basically have regulated financial institutions interacting with one another without having to worry about, like, KYC and all these, like, you know.
So it's like Onyx, but, like, you have KYC to go in, but it's not just institutions, it's retail and institutions interacting?
It could be retail and institutions. It's basically all KYC parties. Like, you can't interact with this L2. Like you literally can't call the RPC from your address unless you like KYC or whatever.
Any layer of the stack, being like a retail level user to an infrastructure provider.
Which is an interesting take, I think, on permission DeFi. Because, like, I think the problem with permission DeFi as it has existed is that basically you need to run like lots of code. And it's just like a complete mess to account for. Like, I think if you have a permissioned L2, all you have to do is you can just, like, you know, just get Aave just to deploy on.
Yeah.
And that's it. And everything works. I feel like that might have some legs eventually. A lot of institutions, I think, are still like nowhere near wanting to touch crypto FTX collapsed everything. And so things are still pretty dark. I mean, I talked to a number of founders and a lot of the, and so like one of them had, I think, you know, Brevin Howard was like a big venture backer for this one investment. And then they wouldn't invest in, they wouldn't use their platform because they just wouldn't touch DeFi. And so I'm just like.
So we'll back you, but we don't want to put any of our capital in it.
Right, exactly. You know, kind of told him to kick rocks, which I thought was like, you know, like we were just like, why would you even make that first place? But it was I think things still look pretty bad for institutions. I think the ETF stuff will be good for the ETF stuff will provide a tailwind, but I don't think we're gonna see like a massive bull market on the back of just ETFs.
Me too. I've been a little bit of a shellacking at the summit recently that me and Mason went to, right? Where I was like, yeah, dude, I really don't think this is gonna number go up. People said like, yo, you know, you have to own the underlying asset in order for the ETFs to actually work, and I'm like, I really don't know how much money is really gonna come through the ETF like channel. I really think it would do anything.
I think it'll
just be like, I just own the underlying assets. I really want to.
It's just
two pathways.
There's a lot of money that's harder to buy Bitcoin.
I think the spot ETF will bring it'll bring some institutional investors that wouldn't have otherwise invested, because I think one of the problems is setting up a new service provider. Like you're like an endowment or something like that. Like the amount of like red tape you have to go through to like open like a Coinbase account mind-boggling, and you have to do all these new internal processes, etc. I think with like an ETF, you can just like click the buy button. Your equities team, you're just like, hey, equities team, just buy this ETF, and they're like, all right,
that's why it's gonna happen.
And the UX is easy.
So there could be an extremely large ball of money that could come, but I'm like somewhat bearish on that, like driving a massive like bull market in crypto by itself. I think Bitcoin and Ethereum, it'll be positive for them.
It'll help with the brand.
Yeah.
it'll help with the general reception of crypto.
I mean, is it like our prices, you know, could price a little of this. That's not, you know, where you don't really have like, I think lots of individual crypto.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like the last two bull markets crypto.
Yeah.
We had just lots of individual crypto. And so, you know, until we see, I think a lot of that, I think we're going to be like, you know, mostly sideways, hopefully up. But Yeah.
What'd you think about the news today, right? With like,
I mean, CZ, yes,
it's been a long time coming.
It's been a long time coming.
You know, I remember, man, like, at the time, just like, you know, like every week is like, oh, Binance going to go down this week.
Over under, basically.
I mean, like every week for a year. And so, for longer, I mean, and it, you know, and it's like, yeah, of course, he's eventually going to get busted. I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, he's not going to go to jail, so I guess that's good.
I think it was overall bullish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that his so-called slap on the wrist was outside of the fine is that he no longer be CEO on the executive board
for like 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like, honestly, like a way better deal than SBF did. But obviously, there's a different level of
crime. CZ is a chiller and SBF is not.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. 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 I mean, like, I think like CZ just ran things really fast and loose. And I think kind of like a, you know, kind of a, you know, it's like a classic. That's how kind of how entrepreneurs like function. Yeah. I think some of the compliance stuff were like basically they know they were funding like terrorism. Like some of the quotes from those indictments are like super damning, and I'm just like, wow, like this is really bad. But like on a philosophical level, you know, running things fast and loose in a growing market and just trying to basically grow the whole pie. You know, I you know, give my hats off to him for that.
Well,
And scaling. And so like I think like what's gonna happen is you're gonna have some, you know, some kind of adult supervision kind of come in. You know, the DOJ is gonna, you know, like the terms of the agreement basically force them to like really actually put real controls in place.
Yeah.
And then they're gonna put real controls in place, and then when CZ can come back to running it again, if he so chooses, you know, it'll, you know, like all the stuff will be set up for him to like have the bad stuff not happen again.
Yeah.
And so I think it's like, yeah, I think it's like, I think it's really possible.
Yeah. It feels like they put on just guardrails, right? It's like, just guys, come on, well, get your shit together.
I like it because it's now there's like, it's all the shit is out of the way. Now it's like, okay, are you going to, let's fix the regulatory regime for crypto. There's no bad actors anymore. Like Binance was chill, but we were like, we all knew they were doing some weird shit. And now it's like, okay, well, they're gone. So like, okay, now it's just Kraken and Coinbase and they're both playing by the.
I mean, well, I wouldn't say Binance is gone. You know, I mean,
well,
we'll see. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Well, they're not gone, but they're like missed. Their wrongdoings have been wiped clean.
Yeah. The craziest stat that I've seen in market structure, and I mean, in years, was when very recently the Bitcoin futures volume on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, like this year, like trading futures or brokerage account or whatever, actually eclipsed Bitcoin perp volume on Binance, which was mind blowing.
Wow.
I think it just happened for a day or two, but
wait, when was this?
Recently. Like last one. And so like that's like a massive change in market structure. Yeah. So I think some of this stuff's there's been big changes happening in crypto.
Yeah.
And changes to the market structure. And I think it's very surprising to me. I you know, if you would have asked me when like CME futures volume would surpass, you know, the equivalent on one of these crypto exchanges, I would have said never.
Yeah, like 20 years from now?
Yeah. You know, or just never.
Yeah.
And so that was like mega surprising. So the market structure is changing. You know, like some of these larger players that have been doing bad things are going to be doing less bad things now. You know, I mean, I still think the space is obviously there's going to be plenty of fraud, et cetera. It's because it's easier to do, but you know, such is true with the internet in general and email and these other things that just make it easier to do fraud too. And so I'm looking forward to see. I think, crypto is kind of like a solution to like some very important, like high level problems.
Yeah.
But we haven't really seen like that many commercial applications.
We're still super early, right? Like we're just the way we look at it is like, we're just building primitives to like really try and test out the tech and see where and how it fits. Right? And it's like, obviously, like you said, like, you know, equity markets weren't really exactly right with like vanguardism of being like the truest virtues of like man really being displayed on the markets there. But that being said, like, you know, like it's good to see the regulatory bodies in the United States at least coming in and being like, okay, we're trying to draw up some lines. I'll be honest, I'm not a big fan of the ABC alphabet soup of like bodies in the United States. Yeah. But like, hey, they're at least like working to set some legal, like amazing. And having the chance to like talk to a few people on both sides of political parties here and see what their thoughts are, it's kind of nice to be like, okay, you're thinking about us. You're thinking about us as builders, and you want to like help work with us. Be like, hey, this is what we are doing. This is what we're contributing. And not all of us are doing, and we're not bad actors. We're trying to find a use case, and we're building real value.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, no, I think, yeah, it's, I think on the regulatory front, it's just like a function of like, with there not being any way a business can know they could legally do business with crypto, you know, domiciled in the US or whatever, I feel like it's, you know, that's just like a super bad place to be in. And so anything would be good for crypto.
Don't worry, guys, I'm on the job.
Nice. Thanks, Chase.
Even if it was like terrible regulation with all sorts of terrible implications to it, if there would at least be some kind of guidance for businesses to work within, then it'd be huge. I mean, like when we were doing all of our venture investments, we wouldn't invest in founders in the US.
Yeah.
You know, like, we just wouldn't do it.
Yeah, and the wild thing about that too is that it's like it carries forward across the world. Whatever the U.S. government does, like, so I actually just finished a law and regulation and blockchain class in school, and one of the things we're talking about is organizations that just because they use Ethereum, because a certain percentage of the nodes on Ethereum are in the U.S. can sue you even if you're based in Singapore or wherever, which is wild.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous jurisdictional argument. I mean, we'll see. They can't, I mean, well, they, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, whether I think it probably depends to some extent on, like, the judge and how they,
oh, yeah,
and how they see that. But I think it's, anyway, it's bad. I think, you know, any regulation is better than none.
I just got a job passing regulation, bro. Yeah. Stand Up Crypto just hired me.
Nice. Congrats, man. Yeah, that's amazing.
I gotta sign the paperwork, but I'm, community director.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Fucking sweet.
So I'll pass the laws for you guys.
Yes.
Yeah. Get off the One of us. One of us.
That'll be good.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, like, one of the funny things is, like, and this is something that we have to unpack in this podcast, and I guess in the next podcast as well, is about our trip to Fort Worth and having a chance to visit the North American Blockchain Summit. Shout out to Lee.
Yeah,
super cool dude. Had the chance to have us in there. We had an opportunity to meet so many builders from different ecosystems and also, like, you know, politicians about understanding what the picks are. Talked to a lot of interesting models, but, like, yeah, general consensus seems to be like, bro, like, tell me where exactly my sandbox ends. So I understand, like, having a conversation doesn't hurt anybody, right? And, like, understanding that there are real people on both ends of the aisle as a politician and, like, we as builders. Is like such a valuable thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but at the end of the day, like, there just needs to be legislature in there.
Yeah.
And that, you know,
Fit 21, dude.
Yeah,
this bill on the House, it's pretty good. And then there's a separate bill in the Senate that's also pretty good. Loomis Gillibrand in the Senate, and then Fit 21 in the House. Solid. And the whole point is to basically establish a regulatory regime in which the SEC and the CFTC both regulate crypto, but they divide it essentially, and there's like a delineation about what's a decentralized token and what's not. So like, there's a test for sufficient decentralization. So like, the tokens that we think are commodities, but then we all know that there are a lot of securities.
Yeah.
So
if you look at the definition of security,
it's like,
you're like, oh yeah, no, this is.
But it's a pretty fair bill. We just gotta get it done. Get it done.
Yeah, so that's great. Yeah, I hope that's able to make it all the way through.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Clifton, it's been great having you on, man. Really appreciate you spending the time with us. Any kind of parting thoughts that you'd share with the listeners? Like, if they want to get into things you do, anything like that you'd like to share?
If people are interested in crypto, I think they should just try to, you know, kind of work with their kind of local communities to get involved. Here in Austin, obviously, hit us up at ATXO. It's been a lot of fun, kind of seeing this organization grow, and
yeah, man,
it's been awesome. Mason's obviously been kind of the main person that's made that all happen.
Clifton has been the brains.
Yeah.
We would not be here without you, dude.
Maybe. But no, it's been, you know, so anyway, I think people, you know, get involved, network, and talk with other like-minded, you know, find other like-minded people, and then just go build stuff. You know?
Yeah, and if you're in a city that doesn't have a strong crypto community, reach out to us and we'll help you start one.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
I mentioned DTXL earlier.
There we go. Yeah, we got to work on them a little bit, but I think that there's a lot of momentum there. At the conference, everyone was like, DTXL, let's get involved. Now it's just going to be like getting it organized. But
yep.
You guys threw like a nice soiree at
Oh yeah, the Thompson Bookstore.
Yeah, it was a very good books.
Very good books, great cigars.
Yeah, yeah. Exceptionally great cigars. Yeah.
All right. Well, we should probably get out of here.
Awesome.
Yeah, this is awesome, guys. Thank you.
All right.